I looked up at the time. I was like, oh, I was having a nice sit. So really lovely to sit with you all today. And I wanted to keep us on this exploration that we've been on about the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. And last week, we touched into the first part. Let me rephrase that. Of the Eightfold Path, the first basket, as it were, is wise understanding and wise intention. And last week, I had found an article in the Atlantic magazine talking about bring back the nervous breakdown, this level of fatigue that we are experiencing. And then back in the 30s, the idea was that the world, to borrow from Wadsworth, the world is too much with us, that it was too overwhelming and people needed to retreat. Not that it was seen not as a personal or a psychological issue, but more sociological, like, whoa, there's so much happening in the world. How can we restore ourselves? We jump forward 90 years in this time globally of the pandemic and the political machinations that are happening externally, and then our own level of fatigue. How do we nurture ourselves? And I'm personally such a strong believer in allowing the teachings of the Dharma to be that which can nurture us and hold us and support us. That this group alone has been meeting for about 20 years. And of course, the Dharma, the stream of the Dharma has been running for 2,600 years. And how can we avail ourselves of teachings that are relevant and helpful in these times that are so challenging? And as we are navigating, all of us together, time of the pandemic, and some of us are being so much deep, profoundly impacted more than others, and the way in which making space for each one of our experiences can still be met and held by these teachings. And today, kind of as a long intro, wanting to explore this idea of wise intention. And this, I wanted to share this quote. It's funny, it's variously attributed to the Buddha and to Gandhi and to Lao Tzu. And I'm going to just have it be anonymous because you could pull it up and it would be quoted as so many different people. But this quote, some of you, I'm sure, have heard that your beliefs become your thoughts, thoughts become words, words become actions, actions become habits, habits becomes values, values become your destiny or your fate. And this line from which the way we orient the mind, so the wise understanding, which is the foundation of believing in that which is true, true being the Dharma as clarity, like what's actually true, what actually leads us to a sense of contentment. The line of the world, the earth is not here to provide us contentment, so let's stop asking. From this Jennifer Wellwood, the Dakini speaks, my friends, let's grow up. Let's stop pretending we don't know the deal here. Or if we haven't truly noticed, let's wake up and notice. Look, everything can be lost and will be lost. It's simple. How could we have missed it for so long? Let's grieve our losses fully like ripe human beings, but please, let's not be so shocked by them. Let's not act so betrayed as though life has broken her secret promise to us. Impermanence is life's only promise to us, and she keeps it with ruthless impeccability. To a child, she seems cruel, but she is only wild, and her compassion exquisitely precise, brilliantly penetrating, luminous with truth. She strips away the unreal to show us the real. This is the true ride. Let's give ourselves to it. Let's stop making deals for a safe passage. There isn't one anyway, and the cost is too high. We are not children anymore. The true human adult gives everything for what cannot be lost. Let's dance the wild dance of no hope. Again, Jennifer Wellwood. So let's stop kidding ourselves that we know the things to which we habitually and through our conditioning cling to, like this, this is going to make me happy. It's actually not. And being this idea of the noble truth that there is suffering. You're born in this world, we are going to suffer. There will be hardships. Okay. How do we want to respond? How do we want to navigate this life in a way that we can most deeply share the gifts that we were given and to be a beacon of light, as it were, to offer ourselves as refuge to people. And it is said that during the Buddha's process, before he became enlightened, he became aware that basically his thoughts kind of fell into two categories. And I'm going to change the wording of a little bit, like basically thoughts that would lead to stress and suffering, and thoughts that would lead to a greater sense of ease. And in that simple, though complicated, to enact the process of being able to pay attention, is what I'm thinking leading me to a place of stress? Or is it leading me to a place of more ease? And in the teachings of wise intention, kind of the orienting our intention of how we want to show up, there's sort of the three main intentions that the Buddha invites us to work with, which is that of renunciation and goodwill and harmlessness, as opposed to sort of the bucket that is desire, ill will, and harmfulness. So we all know what it feels like to be caught in the sense of desire, grasping, or aversion. I want this, I don't want that. A kind of constant push and pull. This is good, this is bad. That movement. Ill will, the way the mind can judge ourselves. I'm not good enough. The ways in which we can have unkind thoughts about ourselves and others, the judging, comparing mind. And harmfulness, the actions, again, not based in a place of skillfulness, when they're not there, that we can cause harm in the world to ourselves and to others. And he was like, well, wait, in terms of the renunciation, it's, can we renounce the thoughts that don't serve us? Can we renounce the thoughts that are rooted in this unskillful clinging or aversion, to be able to see more clearly what actually brings us happiness, sorry, renouncing greed, to simplify needs as distinct from simply following wishes. How often can we, through unconscious habit, just be led about, I want this, I want that. I'm upset that I don't have this or that. And it's just this mind conditioning habit. And when we can bring a sense of clarity, like, oh, I don't need to follow that stream. I can come back. I can feel the earth element. I can feel the water element as a way of grounding in this body to be able to meet what comes. So that sense, that's the renunciation of, what is this serving me? Can we let it go? Cultivating a sense of goodwill, loving kindness. And sometimes loving kindness can just be non-aversion, like a neutralness, that it's not always like, great, I love everything. Not always. So just being able to be in this, okay, can I not have aversion? Can I not add more negativity? Can I pull back from that? Again, it's an intention to abandon a sense of meanness or a sense of indifference. But can we stay steady? And when places are up in challenging places, even leaning into the practice of metta, may I be happy, may I be peaceful, may you be happy, may you be peaceful. And then the harmlessness is really compassion, karuna, the Pali word, to abandon cruelty or dismissiveness. And I love that word can be the dismissiveness, the way in which, like, we don't care, apathy, which is, but can we allow ourselves to stay connected, heart open, with a steadiness of the mind that comes through the equanimity that we can practice, like those working with the earth elements, and being able to meet the world as it is, like, okay, it is like this. Can I pull off the need for it to be otherwise? And in the settling into, okay, it is like this, how do I want to respond? Sorry, a lot of papers here. bear with me. Okay. This is from, it's actually from an article by Parker Palmer, in which he quotes Thomas Merton's book, The Way of Chuang Tzu. So from Lao Tzu. The best are like water. The best, like water, benefit all and do not compete. They dwell in lowly spots that everyone else scorns. Putting others before themselves, they find themselves in the foremost place and come very near the Tao. In their dwelling, they love the earth. In their heart, they love what is deep. In personal relationships, they love kindness. In their words, they love truth. In the world, they love peace. In personal affairs, they love what is right. in action, they love choosing the right time. It is because they do not compete with others that they are beyond the reproach of the world. It has a ring of aspiration, like to live like water. We do not compete. We find themselves in the foremost place and come very near the Tao. Think of the Bodhisattva vow. Human beings are numberless. I vow to save them all. That is quite an aspiration. But how can we allow ourselves to sit with what really guides us, both from an understanding of the world, and then how do we want to put that understanding into action? From Zorba the Greek, look, one day I had gone to a little village and an old grandfather of 90 was busy planting an almond tree. What? Grandfather, I exclaimed, planting an almond tree? And he, bent as he was, turned around and said, my son, I carry on as if I should never die. And I replied, I carry on as if I was going to die any minute. Which of us was right, boss? The quote. How do we want to orient? Do I live forever? Or might I die tomorrow? And the orientation to what do I believe is true in this world in terms of how I most want to show up, what values most guide me. Again, that sense of a North Star in terms of allowing ourselves to orient to that which is going to be truly of service. We live in a time where, at least here in the States, in the dominant culture, we are taught early, early on that happiness lies externally with things that we can accumulate. Not so much. I think through our lived experience, we know it's a temptation to believe it, but we know it's not actually where our freedom is going to come from. The freedom comes more from being able to see clearly, what is the mind doing? Is it leading me to a sense of ease? Or is it stressing me out and leading me to a place of constriction? And in that constriction, we no longer have access to the heart's wisdom and the body's wisdom. And being able to move between understanding the complexities and the seductions and some often shamelessness of the way the mind thinks, and to be able to say, I don't know that I'm always going to believe what the thinking mind is saying. Can I also allow myself to find the wisdom from the heart and from the body? The key is changing our understanding, to understand more deeply the nature of our desires, to change the perspective on our desires so they no longer bind us, they no longer imprison us. When we can see clearly the nature of these desires, then we can become free from them. The hold loosens, so we have more freedom to move in a way that is actually much more congruent and authentic to our deepest heart's desire. Let's do a little exercise. Sorry. Well, I'm going to share a little bit from this book I so love. I've been quoting it every week. it's an online book. Ajahn Sumedho, who's sort of one of our grandfather lineage holders in the Spirit Rock tradition, the Vipassana, called The Four Noble Truths. And he writes about wise intention or wise aspiration. So a couple of weeks ago, in talking about craving, I used the word tangha, T-A-N-H-A, the sense of thirst. It's like the craving, but as if you were walking in the desert, the kind of thirst. And that tends to be more the clinging desire. A skillful, more aspirational quality of desire, the word is sankappa, S-A-N-K-A-P-P-A. And it's an aspiration that doesn't come from ignorance or desire, but comes more from wisdom. In English, desire can mean any number of things. And in Pali, they make the distinction between a desire that's rooted more in out of ignorance or delusion, craving, tangha, versus sankappa, which is more a wisdom-based aspiration. So An aspiration is a feeling, intention, attitude, or movement within us. Our spirit rises. It does not sink downward. It's not a desperate cling. And this is it is from this book, that line that the earth is not the place for our contentment. It's not supposed to be. When we realize this, we no longer expect contentment from the earth. We no longer make the demand that we should be content through something that is offered to us. So we aspire to the truth. Meditation is a way of deconditioning the mind that helps us to let go of all the hardline views and fixed ideas we have. And I quote the line from the Metta Sutta quite frequently that one of the qualities of the, I'm going to paraphrase it, but that when we no longer hold to fixed views, the enlightened one is no longer born into this world. It's such a freedom from believing that I'm right and my fixed views and the commitment to it. When we can release the hold of our fixed views, Ajahn Suchito's offers, like, do I need to have an opinion about this? In terms of, we can be so opinionated, we're seeing out on the national and global stage the harm caused by people holding on to opinions. And can we loosen our commitment to this idea is right, to be able to listen? Kuan Yin, who hears the cries of the world with empathy, compassion, and wisdom, and discernment. And again, this is not about becoming a doormat to, okay, it's just the way it is, I can't do anything, but about being able to see clearly, where can I most skillfully offer the gifts I have in this world to show up again, to be a source of benefit and goodwill and as a refuge, as opposed to adding more harm. So I'm gonna read one more poem and then we'll do a guided exercise, and bear with me a moment while I find that page. Those of you who sat with me can remember the pages of papers that would come with me. Okay, so this poem is by David White. It's called All True Vows. All the true vows are secret vows. The ones we speak out loud are the ones we break. There is only one life you can call your own, and 1,000 others you can call by any name you want. Hold to the truth you make. Every day with your own body, don't turn your face away. Hold to your own truth at the center of the image you were born with. Those who do not understand their destiny will never understand the friends they have made, nor the work they have chosen, nor the life that waits beyond all the others. By the lake, in the wood, in the shadows, you can whisper that truth to the quiet reflection you see in the water. Whatever you hear from the water, remember, it wants to carry the sound of its truth on your lips. Remember, in this place, no one can hear you. And out of the silence, you can make a promise it will kill you to break. That way you'll find what is real and what is not. I know what I'm saying. Time almost forsook me, and I looked again, seeing my reflection. I broke a promise and spoke for the first time after all these years in my own voice, before it was too late to turn my face again. So I ask you to close your eyes. And to allow yourself to think, to reflect, to ask yourself the question, what do I most value in this world? See what comes. And just sort of allowing the answers to arise as they do, to be curious, what do I most value in this world, in this life, on this day? What do I most value? Again, just seeing what comes without editing or shopping around, just staying open. What do I value? What is most dear to me? And how do I want to show up in this world? Are there certain heart qualities that fit within the sense of what you'd most value? The perfections of the heart in this tradition of equanimity and wisdom and wise use of energy, resolve, truthfulness, patience, equanimity. Integrity. To see for yourself what comes when you ask the question, what do I most value in terms of heart qualities? Generosity, humor, love, friendliness, compassion. What comes? What are the heart qualities I most value? Maybe the answers pop up like daisies. Maybe they float around in images. Maybe they're not words themselves, but more in pictures. What heart qualities do I most value in this life? To allow yourself perhaps pick one or two or three or four of those that resonate most deeply. Feel like, yes, I want to commit to living my life with these values as pillars, as these values that root me to what is true about what I love, what I care about in this world. To allow ourselves to feel anchored by these heart qualities, whatever they may be. To feel, imagine in the body, how might it feel if I allowed myself to truly lead with these heart qualities, the sense of loving kindness, acceptance, friendliness, equanimity, whatever those words are, to allow the body to feel what the body, the energies of the body are like. If they're grounded in those heart qualities, what would it feel like to be embodied, ennobled by these qualities? How might the posture be? Your posture, the tilt of your head, the brightness of your eyes. How might you walk? Again, to feel the grounding qualities of these values, and then to imagine, if it's helpful, that these can also serve as the constellation by which we can guide our lives. The North Star, if it's one, or the guiding constellation, if it's more than one, to picture what might that constellation look like, such that when the time comes when we feel lost, because we will, and feel disoriented and disconnected, we can look up to that constellation to say, oh, right, this is what matters. These values guide me. I can come home back into the body, guided by this constellation, this North Star, of what is true and meaningful and what is dear to me in this lifetime. And how might I show up for myself, for my beloveds, for my community, for this earth, if I am grounded in these values and guided by the light of the constellation of these values? How might I show up in this moment and in the next?
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.